So I get asked a lot, being in my 40s, how do I manage to continue to perform all season long at the level that I do? Well, you know, it's a lot of hard work, but I have a lot of help. Triple Threat Performance has been putting this old body back together again for years. I keep tearing it down, and they keep putting me back together. And now, apart from the physical therapy side, I got involved in their athletic training program. And honestly, I don't think the Mountains stand a chance this season. So if you're in the Phoenix area and you're interested in upping your game, check them out at www.ttpaz.com. That's ttpaz.com. Hey guys, I want to take a few moments to thank Sneak Tech Sneak Boots for their support of the show. They make it possible for me to keep it free, so please go check them out at sneaktech.com. Thank you. Now let's roll into the next episode.
Hi, welcome to the interviews with the Haunting Masters, brought to you by Sneak Tech Sneak Boot and Phoenix Shooting Bags. Today we're going to do a little campfire session, a little storytelling session with my friend Jeff Barlow from Nimrod Outdoors. What's going on, Jeff? How are you?
Hey, doing well, John. Thanks for having me on.
Oh, yeah, absolutely, man. So you drew a pretty nice tag this year.
Yeah, I am. I'm super excited. We were actually out to the ranch branding cows when the emails came in, and I flipped through my wife's email because that was the one we were looking for. She had 20 limited entry elk points for Utah, and so we were pretty sure she was going to draw. And I flipped to hers, and it said unsuccessful, and I was really upset with the DWR here in Utah. And then next, I pulled my boys up, and both of them drew deer tags, so I was a little better. And then happened to flip into mine and see a once in a lifetime moose tag, and yeah, I was through the roof. It was great.
That's incredible. I got excited a little bit myself this year. So one of my friends on Instagram sends me a picture, you know, through DM, and it's my name on the main fishing game website for the moose draw. And I was like, no freaking way I drew. And I went on there, and I was on there, but I was on there on the alternates list.
Ah.
And well, I was like,
together then, you in Arizona and me here.
It would have been, yeah, but I'm number 20 on the alternates list. I need 20 people to flake out on a once-in-a-lifetime tag. Well, it's not really a once-in-a-lifetime tag in Maine, but, yeah, I doubt that's going to happen anyway. So, getting closer.
Good chance.
Yeah. So tell us a little bit about what you got going on with Nimrod.
Well, Nimrod began about 3 years ago. My wife and I had a joint Facebook account.
Mm-hmm.
And she came to me one day saying, you know what, you really have got to do something. I'm sick of seeing all your hunting feeds on my Facebook account. and so she said, you got to do something. So I started thinking, I'll just get my own Facebook account, you know, and do my own thing. And about that same time, I was reading in the book of Genesis in the Bible, and it talks about Nimrod, who was a powerful man on earth and a mighty hunter. And I said, dang, there's the name right there. That's perfect. And so it kind of started, you know, force started, because I had to get my own page. But then at the same time, I had teenage sons that, of course, teenagers are into social media, and I was looking for something to do with them to keep me involved with them and their lives.
Right.
I said, let's do this. Let's start this social media thing, and let's do some YouTube videos of our outdoor adventures, and let's see where it goes. Let's just have fun with it. So we started up Nimrod Outdoors, and here we are. It's kind of fun. We're on all the social medias. my kids even talked me into getting a Snapchat. So
if
you're on Snapchat, you can find us on Snapchat. We got a YouTube channel, a web page, and we're just kind of having fun with it. So
cool.
Yeah.
Good deal. So I have you on today to share some learning stories with us. So let's start with your, maybe your most outrageous or most memorable hunt.
Most outrageous and memorable. Well, there's a couple of them. One, my oldest son, my wife and I are parents to seven kids. Six of them are boys. so we have got a lot of hunting to do. When my oldest son, who is now 20, when he was 17, he drew a limited entry elk tag here in Utah with 3 points. So it was pure luck.
Oh, wow.
And so we spend a lot of time up on the mountain, and we did a lot of scouting and just learning a lot of new country. It came down to the hunt, and boy, we hunted hard. There was a great bull that we just couldn't get on the very first part of the hunt. We tried and tried and tried, and Joshua kind of liked that bull, and he was kind of after him. So we kept trying after him, but we could never get on him. So we were down to the last 2 days of the hunt, and he still hadn't filled his tag. And so we started out that morning, and the bulls were screaming really good. And we were making a play and getting in position, and this was pre-light. And we come through this little grove of trees out into this little meadow on the side of the hill, and there's a massive herd of sheep. And a couple of great big sheepdogs stand up, and they're just looking at us and staring at us. And if you know those sheepdogs, mm-hmm. those things are mean. They're mean. And so we just instantly, we froze. And we stood there probably for 10 or 15 minutes till those dang sheepdogs just moseyed on. And then we quietly tried to make our way around this sheep herd without spooking the whole herd. We get into position, and the bulls are making noise, and we see a couple smaller ones pass, and Josh sees one that he's really interested in. He thinks it's a beautiful 6-point bull. Mm-hmm. Like I said, we're down to the last 2 days, so he's feeling a little bit of pressure, and it's a nice 6-point bull, probably around a 300-inch bull. Heck of a bull for a very first animal, first bull.
Right.
So he decides to shoot, and he shoots this bull, and he hits it, and it turns and starts to run, and he hits it again. That time he hit it right in the backbone, and it broke its back, and it goes down. And while his little brothers and I and he are cheering and excited about it, it decides it's gonna get itself up and drag itself by its front feet, mm-hmm. and it dragged itself about 50 yards and fell in a creek.
Oh.
And that's where it decided to expire, was in the middle of this creek. And so when we got over there, the water was about 2 feet deep, and mm-hmm. then above the water level, the bank was about another 2 foot high above that. And okay. as this bull is sitting there in the water with a couple of bullet holes in it now, it's starting to fill with water inside its cavity.
Oh,
and it's getting waterlogged and heavier. So there I am with a 17-year-old, a 15-year-old, a 11 or 12-year-old, and then 9-year-old, and it's just us. And we're probably 3 miles from the trailhead where our car was, and we're trying to figure out what in the world we're going to do now. There's no cell reception. Even if we got back to the trailhead, we would have to drive about another 10 miles or so to get cell service to call help. So we decided to give it a try. And we, me and the two oldest boys, grabbed a hold of the legs and the horns, and we tried to pull it up and out of that water and up on top of the bank. And, you know, you're lifting 4 feet there, and it's just not working. And
right.
We tried and tried and tried everything we could possibly do, and we were completely gassed. And so one of the boys came up with the idea of, well, let's just go get a bunch of rocks, and we'll lift up a back end, and we'll stuff some rocks under him, and then set him down. Then we'll lift the front end up and stuff some rocks under him, and set him back down, lift the back end and stuff some more rocks. And we did that for about an hour, hour and a half, going and finding rocks and bringing them back and just building him up on basically a platform to where we got him up high enough that we could drag him over onto the bank. And I tell you, I don't know that I've ever been so tired.
I bet.
I was completely exhausted, and we hadn't even started the work. We still had to quarter him up. We had to still put him in our backpacks, and we still had to hike uphill 3 miles back to the trailhead. And so that was probably one of the most memorable hunts, not only because of the bad circumstances we were in, but also because it was my son's first ever bull elk, and it was just an unforgettable experience to live that with my boys. It was great.
Sounds like it. I can't wait to make some real memories with my son. He's only 2 years old, but
all day, I got some time very still. Quickly.
Yeah, I mean, he's already been on hunts with me. I stuffed him in my backpack and taking him coyote hunting a few times, and actually his very first time out with me, we got one.
That's excellent.
Yeah.
That's excellent. We came out of that whole story with a new meaning, with a new saying, an adaptation of an old saying, but the new understanding of it. It was that we learned that it's a hate-love relationship. We hate the fact that we love that so much.
Yeah.
So, it was great.
So you said you got a couple. What's your other most memorable?
Another most memorable, and this one kind of leads into, and actually I wrote an article about it in a magazine. That's about modular pack systems. But my buddy and I, it was probably 15 years ago or so, we were in gone into the UN to go elk hunting. And we were young and naive at that point. Thought we were, you know, king of the hill, young 30-year-old studs. And we left his truck and hiked a ways and got up to a glassing point that we had decided beforehand that we were gonna hit and do a lot of glassing. And we sat down and we were glassing, and we hadn't been there long. Sun had come up and it was starting to shine out across this big canyon, and boy, we had a heck of a view. And we spotted some elk on the far side of the canyon. And we said, you know what, they're too far away to tell what they are, but you know what, we got all day, let's go over and look. And so we weren't thinking real well, and we just saw elk, and we were excited. And so we bailed off of that point and took off down through the bottom of this great big old nasty canyon in the Uintas and up on the other side. And all we had with us was our day packs at that point. And we got over there midday, And of course, nothing was going on during midday, so we kind of had a nap and just kind of hung out and looked around to see if we could find the elk. And about 4 o'clock, we heard a bugle. And so I'd got set up on a place where I thought it was a good spot. And I did a few little cow calls, and it bugled again, and I'll be darned if he wasn't coming in. It took him a while to get there, but he finally came in, and I was up on this little knob hiding behind a tree, and he was coming in down below me, and Travis came up behind me and could see me, and he couldn't see the bull, but he could see that I was holding dead still, so he didn't move either. And finally I drew back, and this bull stopped right behind a tree. But his head was on front, and he was looking all around. And so I was just holding that full draw, and I was dying. It was forever. Anyways, he eventually stepped out, and I was able to slip an arrow into him, and he took off and went downhill and went down into the dark pines and ended up dying down there. So we went down and looked at him, and we're like all excited, and then we realized our mistake. And our mistake was all we had was our day packs.
Yeah.
And it's starting to turn evening now. And so we decided that Travis would make the couple-mile trips down through this canyon back to the other side to the truck to get our big packs that we could, our frame packs at that time, that we could haul this out on, and I was going to start quartering him up and getting him processed. He marked me on his GPS, and he took off, and I started working on this big old animal all by myself. And, of course, it got later and later, and Travis hadn't made it back, and it got later and later. I finally got the bull quartered up. And taken care of. I was starting to debone him. And it got dark. And you know the wilderness. If you're out there in the wilderness, when it gets dark, it gets dark.
Yeah, oh, yeah.
And finally, I hear Travis yelling, "Jeff!" And I responded to him, and we kind of yelled back and forth till he finally made his way to me there. And when he got to me, he said, "Man, I would have never even come close to the general vicinity if I hadn't have marked you on GPS. It got dark so fast. I had no idea where you were." Anyways, he got back, and we ended up getting the rest of it all deboned and everything, and we knew there was absolutely no way we were making it out of the canyon in the dark that night. It was just too thick and rugged, and there was just no way we were going to do it. So we put our packs on, and we moved out away from the carcass a ways. We ended up hanging our backpacks in a tree and then moving away from our backpacks that had all the meat in them. Moved away from them and found this great big old pine tree, and we crashed under that pine tree that night. No sleeping bags, no pads, no anything. We were laying on the ground, and it was cold. It was really, really cold.
Did you start a fire in these?
We did. Okay. We started a fire between the two of us, and about every other hour, he'd get up on the even hours, and I'd wake up on the odd hours, and we'd just keep stoking the fire as much as we could to keep ourselves warm all night. But that was a really, really long night when you can start hearing the coyotes making noise and other creatures making noise, and you know there's a carcass not far from you, and there's meat mm-hmm. not far from you. A really, really long night, and I don't think either of us really slept at all. So morning comes, we put our packs on, and we make our way out. But that was our first real experience with the importance of good gear and the importance of a really good backpack, a good right. modular system that you could make a trip out with at any time. So that was a real big learning experience for the both of us.
Oh yeah, I've been there before. It's not fun.
It's amazing how close the ground is.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, it's definitely something that, it's one thing when you have all your gear, you know, like there's a certain, amount of security you feel.
Yeah.
You know, when you have your gear. Of course, there's the comfort, too, of having a sleeping bag and tents and all that stuff, too. But it's just like it messes with your brain a little bit. It messes with your mind a little bit when you don't have those things that you're used to having.
Yeah, it does. We'd been up there. Oh, we'd been up on the mountain for probably 3 or 4 days. And so we were already tired, you know, and we were already sick of eating mountain house food and you know, all that kind of stuff. And so, yeah, this just added on top, and it really does play with your mind pretty good.
Yeah, yeah. I didn't have to spend the night, but I ended up packing this, and it was just a deer. But I was with a friend of mine, and as a matter of fact, this was in Utah also, and I had shot this buck like, I don't know, half an hour maybe before last light. And I didn't make it out till, and mind you, I really wasn't that far. I mean, it was probably like 2.5 miles maybe to the truck or to the road. Or was it to the truck? Yeah, no, it was about 3 miles to the truck. And but it was so steep and nasty. just getting him gutted, and quartered up, and all that was just a chore. I ended up having to like tie him up, and like I can't tell you how many times I fell down the mountain with a knife in my hand, and I was like, oh my god, I'm gonna stab myself. This is what's gonna happen here. And my friend that was with me. Two bad knees, so unfortunately I couldn't rely on him. So I quartered this thing up and, you know, packed them out myself in one bag, and just going up this nasty. And I think we got out of there. It was like 3 o'clock in the morning. It was just miserable, miserable. And I thought about it. I'm like, And I probably would have stayed out there and waited till morning had it not been for my buddy and my cameraman that I left on two ridges over to stay back and watch the deer through the glass for me. And he was over there without a truck. He ended up starting a fire and just sitting there waiting for us because it was just too long of a hike. I didn't expect my, you know, I had radio contact with him, but. You know, I was like, yeah, just start a fire, hang out there. I'll get there we'll get there when we get there kind of situation. But yeah, it was pretty freaking miserable. And to make matters worse, I finally get up the ridge and I get onto like, I'm going to use the word flat loosely, the flat part of the ridge.
Compared to what you were hiking up.
Yeah, exactly. And I got this once, you know, basically, it was a steady walk, steady incline from there on up. And I have my headlamp on, and I look out, and I see two, like, yellow-green eyes, and they're in the front, you know? They're not on the side, and I'm like,
oh, no.
Like, I don't know what the hell that is, but I know it's a predator, you know? So I'm like, right. I'm looking for my big flashlight, and sure enough, it was a freaking bear.
Oh,
just,
man.
Just staring at us about 100 yards off the trail. And I'm like, yeah, this sucks. I got blood all over the place.
Yeah, that's bad. That's a bad combination. You're tired, you're bloody, you're
Yeah.
You don't want to be there, and there he is looking at you.
Yeah, but he went on. He moseyed on. Only took a couple of yells at him, and he was he was out of there.
Yeah.
Thank God.
I remember an experience. It's kind of a funny one. My brother-in-law had shot a spike elk, and we had skinned the whole thing out and quartered it up, and he had gone down and driven up and around on the road, and the road was probably only half mile, maybe three-quarters of a mile uphill.
Uh-huh.
But as we got done and he got back down to me, it started raining and snowing, and it was fairly steep uphill to the truck. And have you ever tried to pack? We didn't have our backpacks. They were in the truck because it was only a half mile, you know.
Right.
Have you ever tried to pack wet, slippery meat on a wet, slippery hill? It was a terrible experience.
I bet.
Sliding all over in your hands and your arms, and you were sliding all over the mountain. I think the meat was dirtier when we got it to the truck than it had ever been in his life.
Yeah, I bet.
So, those are the experiences you'll remember forever, though. The worst experiences last the longest in your mind.
Yeah, that's for sure. I've had some pretty, some doozies, but I don't know. I guess they were shitty when they were happening. When you look back on them, though, they're all, you know.
They're great.
Now it's a good story, yeah.
Yeah, you remember them fondly. You share them all the time, and in the moment, they're terrible.
Yeah. So, do you have any stories that you learned something about hunting? I know you kind of give something about the modular pack deal there, but maybe about something how you learned about hunting that kind of changed the way you hunt today, or?
Well, let me go to that one with the fact that I wrote an article a while back called Trophy Hunter to Trophy Teacher.
Okay.
And it's basically a full circle of my life, going from, as a young married man, going hunting by myself, you know, becoming a trophy hunter and going out and looking for the big bucks, to having kids and taking them hunting with me and learning that I am not a trophy hunter at this point in time. I'm a teacher of my boys, my trophies. I'm a trophy teacher now, and teaching them how to become trophy hunters. And it's just a full circle. You know, eventually they'll grow up and be out of the house, and I can go back to hunting the way I did before, you know. But for a while, my whole experience has changed in my hunting. I'm no longer after those biggest bucks or the biggest bulls that I can find. I'm after an experience that I can share with my boys and teach them. It may only be a forky, but if they're able to get on that forky and harvest their very first animal, what an experience we have together. And so
right.
Those are the things that I'm going through now. I mean, I remember taking my boys out and you know, anywhere from 14 to 12 to 9 to 6, and taking all four of them at the same time, and trying to go bow hunting. Have you ever tried to go bow hunting with four boys in tow?
No. Well, actually, yes. Not my four boys, but I've taken my nephews, and
you can just plan on seeing no animals within 100 yards because they've heard you or seen you or smelt you for a mile before you get there.
Right.
And so you just learn to hunt in a different way. It's a great experience to take them out and teach them the things that they need to do so that eventually they can become a hunter of their own. I shared the experience my son, my second son Jacob. He had gone out hunting with a friend of ours. I had a meeting and was not able to go out that evening with him. But he went out with a friend of ours, and he was able to harvest his very first deer with a muzzleloader, and I wasn't there. But he had learned the things that we had worked on and taught him over the years up to that point, and he was able to harvest that first deer with a muzzleloader, a great little three-point buck, and he did it pretty much all on his own. The progression, to watch the progression of them as they start to hunt to where they end, it's an awesome experience.
Oh, yeah. That's for sure. Like I said, I've hunted with my nephews quite a bit because they're at that age now, 13 and one, range from 13 to 17. And, the four of them the four of them are all into hunting, and they've all drawn tags during the last couple of years, and, had some really cool success with them. But, I feel like, I try to equate it to me and what I did with my dad and my uncles, and I feel like it's so much different now because, I don't want to put anybody down, but I feel like there's that millennial mentality.
Correct.
We've grown up, they've grown up with everything being so like instant that the patience is like, it's not even patient because I'm not a patient person. I'm not. But if they don't see like instant results, like, and it's not all four of them, it's two out of the four, really.
Mm-hmm.
They don't see instant results, they're ready to give up. Like, it's,
they get bored.
But let's do something else.
Yeah, yep, they get bored.
I was having this conversation with I call them my nephews. They're actually technically they're my cousins' children, and both my cousins are, they're double cousins. But they're my father and their father, they're brothers. My father and their father are brothers. My mother and his mother are sisters.
Okay.
And so that's Anthony and Paul. They're brothers, and we have this. We have the same. Like, our parents are brother and sister, basically. That makes.
Yep.
Or sorry, two brothers married two sisters, basically, is what it is. So, we're really close, and we grew up like siblings, So that's why I call them my. So my cousin Paul's kids are. They're the older two, and they're like technically better at hunting. They're better at shooting, stuff like that. But my cousin Anthony's two boys, the two younger ones, their heart's in it more. Like, they're kind of like, and I'm trying to get Paul and Anthony to talk to each other and figure out what the other one's doing right and doing wrong and maybe meld the two. But it's an interesting dynamic anyway. I just noticed, I think about it all the time. I'm like, this is not like it was when we were kids. Like, I don't know. I was just happy to be out there.
And yeah.
I don't know if it's the same.
I know that, I'm I'm 45 this year, and I think I probably started going out with my dad when I was 5 or 6 or so, 7 years old. You know, mm-hmm. So I've been hunting for a long time. My first actual hunt when I packed the weapon and was able to kill my first deer, I was 14. You know, so that's mm-hmm. 30 years. So I've been hunting for a long time, and things definitely have changed. But there are some things that that never change. I remember as a little kid, my dad always telling me, "Hey, hold still," or "Hey, be quiet." Mm-hmm. And I find myself doing that all the time with my boys. "Hey, hold still, yeah. Be quiet." And so there's things that definitely have changed. Equipment is so much better now. But there are things that definitely have not changed, too.
Yeah. No, I mean, that's part of learning how to hunt, is having somebody tell you that. I feel like I'm telling adults that all the time.
Yeah, life lessons.
Quit
right there.
Kicking rocks, you know. Pick your feet up when we walk. Watch where you're stepping.
Yep.
But, yeah.
Very, very true.
Well, cool. Thanks, Jeff. I want to thank you for coming on, and good luck to you on that moose hunt, man.
You know, I am super, super excited about that moose hunt. I'm actually doing a thing on social media right now. It's a contest, so if any of your listeners want to join it, they're more than welcome to. It's hashtag Hunt Ready, and it's in partnership with our sponsor, Ready Nutrients.
Okay.
They put together a great prize package for it. But all you have to do is you go to our website and you enter the contest, and you just put your name and your email in. Then you can upload a picture or a video of whatever you're doing to get yourself ready for your hunt, and then submit it. Give us a little description. I shoot my bow every day, or you know, whatever you're doing to get ready for that hunt. And this all started about 3 weeks ago when I read that email that said I had a moose tag, and I decided if I get a once in a lifetime tag,
motivation.
I had better be ready.
Yep.
And so we came up with this great idea. And so if your listeners want to join, they are more than welcome to join. It's just our website is really easy. It's www.beanimrod.com.
Awesome. Well, thanks, Jeff, again for coming on, and we'll talk soon, bud.
Sounds very good. I appreciate it, John.
Thank you.
All right, talk to you later.
Hey guys, want to stay connected with the podcast? Check out my blog, johnstallone.me. That's www.johnstallone.me. And you could go on there. On the top right-hand corner, there's a little subscribe box. Quickly put in an email address, hit subscribe, and boom, you're done. There's a lot of great information on there. A lot of posts that go hand-in-hand with the podcast that we do, plus gear reviews. Plus we have the signature t-shirts on there, the I Eat Fast Food t-shirts, and the Tuesday Coosday shirts. It's a really good way to stay connected with the podcast. And thanks for listening.